This is On the Other Hand.
A podcast that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community members who are working with others across the political divide. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization by promoting honest and respectful dialogue among people of all political beliefs.
We had a great conversation, Glenn, in our previous episode. You and I compared our reactions to and thoughts about some excerpts from a recent discussion that you had with retired psychologist Dr. Jerry Henderson. In those episodes, you were talking about research and theories concerning political polarization. And in this follow-up episode, we're going to continue that conversation with Glenn White and with myself as we share perspectives across the political divide.
That's right, April. And I want you to know that I've really enjoyed the civil and even kind of curious approach that you and I have taken in discussing our perspectives on these selected topics regarding research on polarization. That curiosity helps us, I think, to understand and it helps us to have a more respectful dialogue. So I really appreciated this opportunity. I also found it pretty helpful for me to clarify my thinking further when we kind of go back over some of the things that Jerry and I talked about when we were covering the research data and the theories on polarization. Now we come to the final episode in this 8-part series on polarization research. So in this last episode, listeners will hear us talk about the impact of the science behind the COVID pandemic being politicized. One other thing that we did was we also discussed how context can determine whether differences in personality and brain aspects of groups like liberals and conservatives are positive or negative. Well, of course, the bottom line is that liberals and conservatives need each other because we each bring something important to the table. So if we're going to be successfully adapting to the things we encounter in the future, we need both voices at the table and we need to work together. And we'll also talk about how we think we did in this initial red-blue discussion. You know, the idea that we had this red-blue discussion was a new one and we didn't know how it would go, but it's turned out so well. I think we're going to want to have more of these in the future. So there's your spoiler alert. We'll probably have more red-blue conversations in the future. Maybe our listeners could even suggest some topics for our talks. I encourage you to do that. Just go to our email, which we'll mention here at the end of the episode. Let's listen in now as we conclude this final episode in our series on polarization research.
You know, the whole issue of vaccines and the science behind them and did we have enough science to say that they were safe or not became a very interesting kind of conversation issue. I would say it became very politicized as we were, the U.S. and others were rolling out the vaccines. It wasn't just politicized, by the way, in the U.S. That was an interesting thing that came to my level of awareness is that there were people all over the world where it was being politicized. So it's not just us that were having these political differences. We sometimes think of ourselves as we're the only ones with the problem with polarization, and that is certainly not true. But, you know, what happens when we politicize science? I think that is an interesting question. From a Braver Angels perspective. Your thoughts on that?
My first thought is that any human endeavor, no matter what it is, whether it's science, politics, even religion, is influenced by people and their peculiarities and their biases. So there's always going to be some of that with any human endeavor. But you know, I like the long-term outcome from following a good, solid scientific approach.
You took the good route that way. You didn't go in any direction that was going to cause me to get to practice my Braver Angel skills there. Good for you. There you go.
I could be persuaded. Maybe you give me an idea of what direction you're thinking about.
I think about, okay, I'll just give an example. The folks who were trying to decide, do I give vaccines to my children? Where there's not a lot of science on that in terms of, you know, and then do I not? I mean, and the whole, and it brought up again to the level of awareness, I think, the folks that are vaccine hesitant or anti-vaxxers. Yeah. I prefer calling them vaccine hesitant rather than anti-vaxxers because I think sometimes negative words matter. What we call people matter. And so how we weigh science, I think the politicization of science and what I was trying to get at, not to try to have you react, but...
Let me respond to the end when I see where you're going. To me, it's a matter of balancing competing issues. You know, we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently damage or kill people by giving them some dangerous substance because we think it might help as a vaccine, okay? So that is a legitimate concern. And so it is important that we take the time to do good, solid research and have a pretty confident notion that people will be safe to take this vaccine. It's also a very good idea to take seriously a pandemic that is novel and that many people are incredibly vulnerable to, that would result in millions of deaths and other long-term health problems and disabilities. And I think that's what happened here in this pandemic situation, is that you had a particularly malevolent virus that initially had major, major implications for health of instability of societies around the world. So you had to do some balancing. Do you take the full time needed that you would with something that was less urgent? Or do you make some reasonable trade-off, saying, well, we've got this here, we can do this shorter study, but we can reach a reasonable degree of confidence. We can't be sure, but we got to do something or we're going to lose a lot of people. So I think that's the kind of thing that happened. And so they made the decision. And then as time went on with something new, they learned more about it. And they said, oh, we can back off a little bit on this concern. This remains a concern. Here's a better way to handle it. What I worry about is that for people who are against vaccination, that they failed to appreciate that there was a very real difficult balancing act going on, and that there was the natural need to learn as we go, and that you didn't always know to begin with. And that's probably my biggest concern about the movement against vaccination, was a failure to appreciate that, and that in some ways it became political. Although I will acknowledge that the other thing also is true, that people for political tribal reasons latched totally onto, yes, let's all vaccinate and you're an idiot if you don't. I mean, it works both ways.
I'm going to practice some of my listening skills here. I agree with you on that it is a weighing of risk. And I really like that point that you're making. You know, the risk of getting sick versus the risk of kind of the science not being far enough along to know whether it's I was vaccinated, so obviously I weighed those risks and came out on maybe a different side of than others, obviously, even on my own political side. But I've also had COVID. I mean, so, you know, but so I'm like, it's not a foolproof protection, just like a flu shot. It's not a foolproof protection. And we all, I think, kind of recognize that, you know, many of us. And so, but even, you know, as I talk to some fellow conservatives that I know and family members who didn't choose to get vaccinated, the thought was for them that the risk of taking the vaccine was higher than the risk potentially of getting the virus. And you know, some and we don't even know why some people got really sick with COVID and others didn't. I mean, the virulent strain that came out at the very beginning was certainly more virulent. I'm not saying that word right, but certainly was more powerful than the strains that have come since then. But
Then that initial virulent strain did not affect everybody equally. Some people, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
No way of knowing which one would react how.
And until you get you see somebody, and I think almost all of us know somebody that's had, there was a point at which many of us didn't know anybody that had COVID except from a distance. And then when Omicron came through, we all kind of like knew somebody that had had COVID, or we experienced it ourselves. And so, but hearing the reasons that, and I'm going to kind of, this is not, I'm now holding my perspective, I guess, of some things that I learned through this process. So can I talk about that just in terms of just the humanness of this? I have begun to be willing to, I think at the beginning, after when the vaccine came out, I began to, and even the masking things. I mean, there were so much things that were posted on my side of the aisle against social distancing and against masking, and that I personally didn't agree with. But I remember having conversations with people who didn't agree with me on some of those issues, including people in my own friendship and family network. And as I began to listen to their stories, although I didn't change my opinion, I began to understand a little bit more about the decision making that they made, and I began to appreciate, you know, some things that they were actually struggling with in their own health. And more recently, I had a former student of mine that we had never had the conversation about vaccines. I mean, why do I need to have that conversation with her? She would always mask when the university would require masking, so I never had the conversation. But she told me recently that she had been denied from some jobs that she was applying for because they required vaccines, being vaccinated, and how difficult this is, you know, has become for her, even in some of the job searching that she's doing. And I felt a compassion for her rather that I think some point in the pandemic I would not have felt. I would have said, well, just get the vaccine. I mean, what's wrong? Because she told me about why she didn't, and it was health conditions and immune things and things that I hadn't thought about because I didn't experience that. And so for me, again, as I begin to hear more people's stories, not that they're spouting facts at me, but their own personal life stories, about this, and the pain stories of, you know, families that lost multiple family members during the pandemic as well, and decisions. And, there were so many things that were negative that came out during that time that you would see posted, like, well, they didn't get a vaccine, well, good riddance then, when they would get sick or almost die. And I'm like, guys, really, do we want to go there? Is that the negativity that we really want to have as human beings? And I couldn't go there.
Well, I totally agree with you there. That's just, to me, unacceptable. Whatever side you're on, if you have no compassion for other people, people make mistakes all the time. I make mistakes. You make mistakes. You know, are we going to, you know, say we don't care about someone because they make mistakes or because they have a judgment that's different from us? There are some people out there that some people might call evil, bad actors, criminals, sociopaths, whatever. You know, if I figure out I'm dealing with someone like that, I'm going to stay away as best I can. But the vast majority of the people are probably doing as good as they can with what they've got. I may strongly disagree with them. I may think they're making huge mistakes. But it's easy to cast them into that other tribe that we have to be scared of because we're going to die if we get exposed to them. And so we get real tribal. It's a natural response. It's easy to go there. But we try to be, I think most of us as human beings, try to be better people and not just animals that are just totally prisoners of those more primal impulses, and to think through and do the right thing. And for those people who that matters to them, then yeah, let's try to show some empathy, even if we don't necessarily agree with people.
And that really relates to what we're doing in Braver Angels, for sure. Well, I'm sorry, I took us down a little bit of a rabbit trail. We Might not even end up including this on the same kind of episode, but we'll see. That'll be something that we'll have to edit and figure out. So are we ready to kind of wrap up, or did you want to say anything more about the science at this point?
No, I think that's good. What I might do is come back with a few more points about science that I have on my mind. But I think let's wrap this episode up for today. Let's you and I just briefly talk about how we each think we did today as far as being faithful to the Braver Angels approach in our discussions. So I want to know, what did you think? What did we do well? Were there any ways that we could do better the next time we have one of these Red Blue conversations? Because I like the way this has gone, and I envision us doing this more in the future. What do you think?
I love this today. And I tell you, though, Glenn, I was nervous about talking about these things, not because I don't trust you, because you and I have developed a relationship over time. And I think that helped us as we were listening to each other. But I think I was nervous because I sometimes don't know when my lizard brain is going to just automatically, and that's the right amygdala, by the way, if you didn't catch that. But I wasn't for sure when that part of me was going to kick in or if it was. And so I think for me, what was effective was I was aware from the get-go that I am going to be the better angel of my nature. You know, the Abraham Lincoln quote that Braver Angels actually took from originally, it was called Better Angels. And I think I can speak for myself. I think that I actually did okay listening to you using I messages, maybe telling some, you know, more personal thoughts about where I was thinking and coming from, and my own, even a little bit vulnerability in terms of, well, yeah, I kind of prefer conscientiousness to openness, kind of, just as an example. And, you know, I still don't know that I can fully accept all of the it's always this way, conservatives are always this way, or always liberal. But, you know, the reason why I don't think I have to accept that is because it's not that clear cut. And you made it clear when you were talking about that this is a science that's always growing, that we there are many things that impact and our perceptions, our brain certainly, and how our brains are made, and tendencies certainly have an impact, but there are many things. And so I found this conversation very enjoyable, and I think one of the reasons is because I approached it as a learning conversation, as an attempt to really want to learn, not just to come in and try to persuade on my side. And I tell you, that took a lot of the angst down, a lot of that amped upness down for me as we entered into and continued the conversation. What about you?
I think it went very well. I really enjoyed the conversation, the going back and forth. I think we both, especially you, I think I tried my best to follow the philosophy that we set out as our goal to begin with of good communication practices consistent with the Braver Angels philosophy. So I think that we maintained a respectful communication and dialogue. Other thoughts I have, I do think you talked about, you know, not being entirely convinced on some of the things. The science is always a moving process, but hopefully gradually gets further and further upward, and we know more and more that we feel comfortable with saying, okay, that's settled science, let's move on to the next question. I think many of the research-based differences between liberals and conservatives that we've talked about today and that I've seen in the other literature, there are enough studies done of different types that I think we can have some confidence in that. But the problem is if people get to thinking, well, that means then that conservatives have the high ground or liberals have the high ground on this. That's where the mistake happens. It's a mistake to assign completely negative or positive value judgments to those differences, because as I pointed out before, each attribute can have both positive and negative implications. So in a way, it's going to depend upon the particular environment or context that you're in as to determine whether that's a positive or a negative. For example, let's say if you're in a stable, mature society where things are going well, liberals who tend to be more open to experience, that may be a good thing for them. And it may be advantageous for society as well, because they're more likely to reach across boundaries and to make positive creative contributions. And the culture is more willing to tolerate their, you know, filling with the boundaries. Now, that same tendency to openness, though, it might be a real problem if you're in a society that's unstable or rigid or maybe is in the process of change. Cultures like that, to have that degree of openness could be dangerous. Certainly to the individual, we're seeing that in some of the other countries now, that when they have a thought different than the country's leadership, it jeopardizes their health and well-being or life. But it could also mean that the more you have people who are open, that may facilitate more instability in the system. Another way to think about it is the tendency of conservatives, according to the research, to be more prone to alert to threats or respond to them. Now, that could be very positive because it could help them be more likely than liberals to survive situations that threaten their survival. Okay. They would be quicker to notice the threat, and therefore they'd be quicker to avoid it or react in some successful way to deal with it or adapt to it. But a higher degree of responsiveness to things that are new or different could also mean that conservatives may be less adaptive to new changing situations than liberals sometimes, because that means that type of person would miss out on learning new and better ways to function in a changing society. So that's that complicated thing that, to me, is my way of kind of summarizing all of this. The really key point here that I think is really critical that I have mentioned in other presentations, given that both tendencies have strengths and weaknesses, is that a society that values and tolerates and uses people with differing tendencies may well be a more healthy and adaptive culture. It kind of goes with what David Brooks was saying. Liberals and conservatives need each other. We need each other. We need all the different people with different, diverse ways of looking at things and believing in things to be the best group that we can be, because each of us has something to contribute if we can find ways to communicate with each other and treat each other respectfully.
Boy, so many good things there, Glenn. I just want to point out three kind of takeaways here, along with in terms of the topic and content of the conversation. I really like the comment that you made about where we get into trouble sometimes with the science. And I think even, you know, scientists can do this in their interpretations, but the way the science is communicated to the public could also, and how it's picked up in the media could also do this. But anytime we put value judgments on certain personality characteristics are better than others, that leads to, especially if it's connected to a group, can lead to the stereotyping and dismissing of the other that causes us to stay within our own tribe and group and really push against and not approach people who are different than us. And I think that's where one of the major problems is. You know, I also think it's that, you know, as you're making comments about being aware of threats, that is necessary. And in some societies, I think about military who have, you know, they have to be so alert all the time, you know, when they're in the fighting zones. It's not that threat assessment is not important. It is necessary. I think it is important, though, to ask ourselves, what is that threat assessment based on? What inputs are we getting to say that particular thing that we're looking at as a threat is really a threat? Who's telling us that it's a threat? Is it our group that's telling us that it's a threat? I know for many years, I hardly knew anybody outside of my own faith community, for example, especially when I was in high school and early college years, that I would really connect with. And once I started meeting people outside of my own faith community and interacting and becoming friends with people, it doesn't mean I have to give up my own belief system. It means that I embrace the humanness and the beautifulness of other people being made in the image of God, which was consistent with my faith community. But I was kind of like, you know, don't hang with those people. I mean, you know, my mother's like, You know, even within Christianity, we have faith divisions, right? It's like, oh, no, that. You could never marry that person, or we could never have that kind of person for president. I mean, you can fill in the blank here. But what's that based on? You know, what beliefs, what information? Why is it that we were afraid to have that faith tradition as a, and I'm talking about Christianity here, you know, so I'm limiting, but used to be, you know, we couldn't have a Catholic for president. We couldn't have a Mormon for president. Why? Why? You know, what is it that we are, you know, what's the information that we're basing that on? Anyway, so I think it's important as we're assessing threats to think about, okay, why do we think that is a threat? To ask that. And then I love the point that you made about balancing each other out. You know, in the relational world, we often say that opposites attract, that somehow we're connected to each other. My husband and I are very, very different. And why do I really like him? His strengths are where my weaknesses are. My strengths are where his weaknesses are. And we balance each other out and as a whole make each other much better. So why can't we have that same kind of thought processes towards people who hold different political opinions? Political opinions that might actually be based on very similar values. We both value life. We both value safety. We both value freedom. Maybe we put them at different levels in terms of what we value most, but we have common values, and being able to focus on those and see how, okay, so we come at it differently. We believe it ought to be done differently, but I bet we can come up with things that we have in common. I tell this example sometimes now because I don't know that you know this, Glenn. Because you and I have connected on a common ground workshop in Arkansas that I had some feelings about, I'll just say. That I said, I don't know that this is a Braver Angels Common Ground Workshop. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to do Common Ground Workshops anymore. But since then, I have done two nationally based Common Ground Workshops on the abortion issue. And the beauty that came out of that, the two people, the two moderators and I, we were on different sides of the pro-life, pro-choice situation. The first time we did the Common Ground Workshop, we did it with reds and blues, and that would blew my mind, because Republicans and Democrats, because what I thought was going to be, who I thought was going to be pro-life and who I thought was going to be pro-choice, were not at all that. So in the red group, there were pro-life and pro-choice. In the blue group, there were pro-life and pro-choice. And I was like, wait a minute, blowing my stereotypes out of the water, first of all. But even within that, they were able to come up with some common values and concerns and policies. But then the next time we did it, we're like, okay, we're going to put people into pro-life and pro-choice groups, and this time ask them to see if they can come up with common values and common concerns and common policies. And they still were able to do it. And some of them wanted to go and later and do op-eds and letters to the editor and work together across the divide. And I just am able to see that the processes that we use in Braver Angels really do work.
And April, that is a key message that I hope our listeners carry with them. We aren't necessarily doomed to continued tension, anger, and chaos in our country's political dialogue if we just use sound communication practices and conflict resolution techniques, including some of those that we teach in Braver Angels. If we do that, our country, I think, can get back into conversation. And that is how we can once again work together to solve problems and move us all forward as a country. So I hope we'll all commit to that mutual respect and collaboration where we have common ground.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We hope you've enjoyed the last part of our discussion today with Glenn and me. And I hope that you check out the other parts of our conversation. about these differences that we have had looking at science, but really more commonalities that we've had, as well as past podcast episodes of On the Other Hand on the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org/podcast.
As always, we'd love to hear feedback from our listeners, and we'd especially appreciate ideas for speakers or topics. So just email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. That's otherhandar, no spaces, @gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White.
And April Chatham Carpenter.
Have a good evening. Let's all work to bring our community closer together, shall we?